This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Beth Lindop, and today I'm joined by Paul Gorst and Ian Doyle, who hopefully are in much better form than Liverpool were on Thursday night. The Reds were beaten 3-0 by Atalanta in the first leg of the Europa League quarter-final tie. It marked Liverpool's joint heaviest European defeat at Anfield and is only the fifth time in Jurgen Klopp's tenure that they've lost by more than one goal at home. Before we get into all of that though, a shout out to our sponsors, NordVPN, who can help you keep up to date with Liverpool, or if after last night you'd rather Atalanta, wherever you are in the world. Let's get stuck in then, Gorsty. Overall reaction, I think in your verdict last night, you described it as Liverpool's most shocking defeat of the season. It's hard to argue with that. I mean, what went wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's only six defeats in there, so you can't be too critical. But yeah, I mean, be quicker to tell you what went right, really. You've just said then in your intro, you're up that me and Doyle are in better form than Liverpool were. But I can't really promise that. I don't know about you, Doyle, but yeah, it was really poor, wasn't it? I think very early on, you realise that these are a step above what Liverpool have played already in the Europa League. Kind of breezed through the group stages without too much of a fuss. And then Prague was a bit of a farce, wasn't it? Over both legs, 11-2 on aggregate. So Liverpool, maybe they were sucked into the trap of believing that it was going to be of similar standard. And I think Klopp might have thought similar, given that he made six changes. And of course, he trusts everyone in the squad, and you know, he'll always argue that there are no fringe players. I remember him saying that one years back, and it's kind of a theme that he stuck to. But he made six changes, and none of them really worked. I'm sure we'll come through them individually. But Schumacher and Di Ketelaere up front were two physical units who gave Van Dijk and Konate, you know, a right battle all throughout the game. And that's probably something that they're not used to at Anfield, in all honesty. And Liverpool struggling to create. And I said on a couple of pods ago that Liverpool just feel as though they've left it or started a bit too early to be getting dragged into the kind of emotional heft of it all, of what every result means in the wider context of the season and Klopp's leaving party and all that type of stuff. And it just feels as though they're draining themselves now. And it feels as though, as well, that this injury crisis that they battled through so well for best part of 2 or 3 months now, it's just finally catching up to them at the wrong time. Obviously, we're seeing Jota and Trent was on the bench last night, and you know, Curtis Jones was back, wasn't he? And we're starting to see that ease off, but the players who have been fit looked like they're in need of a rest, and never was that more evident than last night.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we'll get on, Doyle, to the individual performances in a minute, but Gorsty mentioned there about, you know, six changes made from the weekend. The atmosphere was quite flat, didn't really feel like a European quarterfinal. We'll obviously get onto some of the reasons behind that as well. But do you think there was an element of complacency creeping in? Because, you know, Atalanta are, you know, they're not Real Madrid, they're not Barcelona, but they are unbeaten actually in 11 Europa League away games. That's a spell stretching back 6 years. I mean, they're not, you know, any slouches. They're going to come in, put in it. Performance. Do you think there was a bit of complacency that crept in from maybe fans, players, and maybe even the manager a little bit?
Yes, no, and no. I think there was complacency from the fans, but there wasn't from the team, and there wasn't from the manager.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, because I think that people didn't quite understand that it was Europe. Well, okay, right. We'll come on to the other reasons in a bit, so we'll just deal with the fans later on, the crowd, because I know we've all got strong views on what happened there. But the players, I don't necessarily think they were complacent. I just think they were tired. Mm. I just think you had the imperfect storm of, as Gorse just mentioned, the players who'd been playing for ages looked tired. The players who were coming in looked so they didn't have rhythm. The players who were kind of half and half played half and half. You look at the likes of, for example, Harvey Elliott, who, when you look back, probably shouldn't have gone off at half time because he was better than quite a lot of the people who came on in the second half. Yeah, I just think the whole thing was just, it's what happens when you are a new team pressing for a quadri. I mean, I read something basically this morning just before I was coming in. I think it was on Instagram actually. And someone said that we were going for the quadruple and now we've only won the Carabao Cup. This is like an absolute disgrace. It's like, hang on. No, it's not. It's the other way around. It's like, this is a completely new team. They've won a trophy already this season, and they're still joint top of the Premier League.
I like people on social media to go massively over the top.
Well, I booked, whether you like it or not about social media, it does now, because everybody's on it, reflect.
Yeah.
Really. That is because everyone's kind of like, now the case, putting him at the crowd. So it's like, you shouldn't fancy, pay their money, or in some cases, don't pay their money. And just, or in some ways, they're always indirectly paying out, whether it's a TV subscription or not, memorabilia, something like that. Everybody's got a kind of invested into the club.
Paying 2% more soon.
Yes, we'll go on to that in a bit. And I just think that when you are a crowd, Anfield, and you make such a massive deal about when Klopp says, you know, they're like the 12th man, this, that, and the other, if you've got a team that's struggling and the fans who weren't given very much to respond to on the pitch, but they didn't really respond to it anyway, I think the complacency came from the supporters. I don't think, even before the game, you kind of got the impression this was Atalanta's most important game of the season. And it wasn't even Liverpool's second most important game this week, because you had United and you got Palace coming up on Sunday. And I think they'd rather win the Premier League than that, than the Europa League, even though Dublin would have been, and let's be honest, they're not going to win 4 or 5 nil, are they, in the second game. So it would have been a nice trip, but that's not going to be happening now. So
let's clip this one up, because we might be showing this back next Friday.
Well, the thing is, either, you know,
but playing a pass.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I'll just say that inspired the team to a fantastic comeback. They did win 5-0 at Atalanta last time. But yeah, we'll go through the fans in a bit. We'll go through the team now. And every single player, basically, with one exception, I'd say, and I know you even disagree with me on this, Beth, about Andy Robertson. I thought he was okay when he came on.
You know, I thought he was okay. Just before we get on to the individual performances, I just want to come back at you on something that you said about sort of the fans. And I do agree the atmosphere was flat and the fans are guilty probably of being a little bit complacent. But in terms of the negativity that has crept in since the Manchester United game, obviously, you know, on social media, there's a very histrionic reaction, as Ghosty said, not like Twitter to be the source of a meltdown, is it? But I think when you look at Liverpool over the last few years and the tight title races that they've been in, I'm not talking about the season that they won the league, you know, the season that they've missed out by a point in 18-19 and then in 21-22, Liverpool fans know how costly it can be to drop points, and this does sort of feel like a do-or-die season for Liverpool. You know, maybe it shouldn't do, because they're a team transition, because it's like Jurgen Klopp's last season.
They're a team in transition, then it's not do-or-die, is it?
It's overall, you know, how... I mean, I don't think anything from now on massively affects Klopp's legacy, but it can finish it more, can't it? So... I get what Beth means.
Yeah, I'm not saying it should be do or die in terms of, like you say, it's a transition season, but because of Jurgen Klopp leaving, it's his last chance to win the league with Liverpool.
And get behind them and stop moaning.
Yeah, no, I'm not
you
saying
tell some people to stop moaning.
I'm not saying that
there's a pot there.
I don't moan. I merely point things
out. I'm not saying that people shouldn't back the team. My point to you, and I'm not sort of saying that my point is right and your point is wrong. I'm just saying, people would argue that because, you know, we've lost out a couple of times by a single point, and because it's, you know, the emotion of Klopp leaving, that's probably why there is so much anxiety and so much frustration when results haven't gone Liverpool's way. That was my point.
I would turn that around and say, surely that also means that if you know how difficult it is, you need to be backing them all the way.
Yeah,
because
no,
that's how difficult it can
I'm
be.
Not, I'm not.
You've seen the difference that the crowd can make. And it's obviously the crowd don't pass the ball, this, that, and the other. But as I said before, if you're selling yourself on the Anfield experience of the 12th man and all that kind of stuff, then you also need to step up. And I think the crowd and the players and the coaching staff just all didn't. Well, and that, by the way, that has nothing to do with the protests as well. That had nothing to do with that.
I was going to say, on the flip side of, you know, we all recognise the importance of fans. So should the people making these decisions in terms of increasing the price and whatever else, because you're directly harming what is your USP, essentially.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, let's get into this, because I know you two sort of disagree on your viewpoint around the protest and whether it was the right time to do it last night. Obviously, for anyone who doesn't know, there were no flags on the cot before kickoff.
It was one flag, wasn't it?
One
two,
flag.
It was two, actually. Two.
Well, a small one next to a big
saying
one.
No to ticket price increases. This is all off the back of the club announcing that season tickets will be going up by 2%. I think widely in the fan base, it was quite a popular decision to protest. And as Gorsi said, the general sentiment is that fans, you know, it's a very tough time financially for a lot of people. And, you know, the club shouldn't be, you know, benefiting from the goodwill of fans being willing to pay extra money. There's also the counter argument that 2% is the lowest rise in the Premier League. Costs have gone up. I think Liverpool said costs have gone up for 40%, was it? Or something around.
Do you know what? I mean, this story was obviously from last Friday morning, wasn't it? And without looking to kind of pass the book, we were doing post-match coverage for last Thursday's game, and then we've had Sunday's game, and I've been off most of this week apart from last night at the game. So I haven't actually had a chance to speak to people, you know, on the supporters board, it's been to Shankly at the club itself. So a little bit cold coming into this, a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I can see why it was organised. I can see why they felt the need to do it. And on the flip side, Liverpool will argue and have argued that it is one of the lowest increases in the Premier League this season. But a 2% increase is probably negligible profits for the club. And of course, you know, they've blamed rising costs and so on. But it doesn't quite tally with me, that complaint, because I remember the club sort of saying privately, you know, look at what's gone up, and they were talking about utility bills and stuff, and you know, who's gas and electric hasn't gone up, you know, in the last couple of years. It's just the way of the world. And when Liverpool are able to bid X amount of money for Moises Caicedo, and then you moan about rising costs, you know, it's one or the other. You can't,
you know,
really
say to that. They'll say, well, we can't pay for Moises Caicedo if we don't get that 2%. That's what they'll say.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, these decisions are made by Billy Hogan or maybe even further up the chain and within the FSG board itself. But I can see why people are pushing back on it. And if they're going to protest, the idea of a protest is to disrupt things. And they certainly did it last night with the atmosphere. And okay, it's kind of counterproductive to a point, but that's what it's all about.
Slightly playing devil's advocate, because
not like you, Ian.
They definitely didn't mean to do it in this way. It says, did they end up harming the team rather than the club? Tom Werner was there, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And do you reckon it'll make any kind of difference? Because when Liverpool fans did do a massive protest, what was it, 8 years ago now, when they 77, yeah, the £77, and we had 12,000 people got up and left after 77 minutes, that made a massive impact.
Yeah, you're right. That you know, is literally people voting with their feet, isn't it? And that would have made more of a meaningful impact to people who are hard-nosed businessmen, as opposed to, oh, they're all still there, they just haven't got flags. They've all paid to get in and whatever else, so I'm not bothered.
Well, that's my concern for the protesters, that there could have been a different way to do it. Like, they could have just kept the... I mean, I'm not telling them what to do, but I'm just saying, I wonder whether they had a think through of what needed to be done. And they could have kept the flags, but the one that they did have, they could have had a couple of them across the front and just kind of kept them there for as long as possible.
If they'd have walked out on 77 minutes, they'd have missed the third goal.
To be honest, some people had walked out by that point, by the press box.
Yeah, well, anyway, let's move on to Liverpool's defensive record. They haven't kept a clean sheet now in the last 8 games in all competitions. They've conceded 14 goals during that time. I know, Doyle, you're not a massive fan of XG, but according to Opta, Liverpool conceded an XG.
Every time I hear XG, it's like, I think, you know, well, did it used to be a G?
Yeah.
Former G.
Yeah.
Liverpool conceded a former G of 2.58 last night, which was the highest by a visiting side at Anfield since Manchester City.
What was it? Sorry, I wasn't listed. I was too busy laughing.
Yeah. So the main point is they've created more chances than anyone really since Manchester City visited Anfield in February 2021. Mm. Not probably what anyone was expecting last night. Gorsi, overall, Liverpool's defensive record is poor in the last few months.
Yeah, I mean, you can caveat that by the fact that Liverpool have had one of their first choice back five playing regularly, I can't even say it, for what, 2 months, 2.5 months?
Yeah.
I mean, Conor Bradley's been exceptional for a young player coming in and made about 20 appearances. Joe Gomez has been outstanding at left back. Jarrell Kwanza, we can't really fault him, except for his pass to Fernandes last week. But, and Kelleher as well. But at some point, that has to give, doesn't it? And it didn't give in the Carabao Cup final. It didn't give against, you know, whoever, Brighton at home the other week. But at some point, you know, maybe it was bound to happen. And I thought Tsimikas had a poor game last night. I don't wish to single him out too much, but that was only his second start since before Christmas, I think.
Yes. Southampton in the FA Cup was the other one.
Yeah, it kind of showed a little bit, didn't it? Joe Gomez has been getting moved from pillar to post, and it, you know, having to adapt your game accordingly must be difficult every 3 days in a new position. Canate still looks short of full pelt since he went off in Prague a few weeks back. And I thought Van Dijk was poor by his standards. I'm normally the first one to sing from the rooftops about how good he is, but he was well below it last night, and so was Kelleher, really. So I guess at some point, the fact that they haven't got the first choice back five playing week in, week out, and defending is a systemic thing, and it's a thing that comes with routine and consistency and all that type of stuff, and Liverpool haven't been able to do that at all. So at some point, it was going to come back to haunt them, and it did last night against a very physical and aggressive Atalanta side, who fully deserved to win, to be fair to them.
Yeah, Doyley, do you think that is all that it is, the fact that Liverpool have had to change so much about the back line over the last couple of months, or do you think it's more, you know, it goes deeper than that, it's the system that they play, it's an issue that needs to be addressed?
I'd be interested to see, because I could check this, but I haven't, whether the back four and the keeper had ever played together before as a starting lineup. I'd be surprised.
I doubt it.
Gomez was right back. Tsimikas left.
Yeah, I'd be surprised with Kelleher in goal. I'd be surprised if they had. You're right. You can't just keep on doing that forever and then it doesn't catch up with you. I think it does also, typical me now looking at it as positive, it just shows you how well Liverpool have done to be on 71 points.
famously positive tones of me, yeah, exactly.
It just shows you how well. It's a reminder. It's an absolute reminder of how well they've done this season.
Yeah. I've got to say, though, since Ian Doyle has started being positive on this podcast, Liverpool's form has gone downhill.
You know, so it's not only, it's because we're
reverse psychology.
A negative slant and we're a bit down in the dumps.
Or it's, I understand, being very old, that there is a time to be positive, and it's now, and unfortunately not as many people as me are being positive about things.
I think you should write this today.
No, but I've kind of written it. You know, there's this former Liverpool players I've spoken to who are very much in agreement with me, certainly with the Premier League, and then say, look, there's still seven games to go. You know, I know I've just written them off in the Europa League, but I'm also a realist. Come on, they're not going to win 4-0, are they? But in terms of the Premier League, it's still very much on. So I think we should now, literally now, as in literally now, this second,
from this moment,
draw a line under the Atalanta game, and we should move on to Crystal Palace and look ahead to what Liverpool can do to build upon what was a good performance against Manchester United, with the exception of the finishing.
Who Arsenal and City got? I mentioned.
I have no idea.
Arsenal got Villa at home.
Yeah, that's right.
City have got Luton at home.
That's right, yeah. It's Villa.
So City are going to get 4 points.
it was around this time, wasn't it, on the reverse fixtures where Villa beat Arsenal and City within like a week.
And Luton only lost 2-1 to City, was it? I think it was at home.
Yeah. And do we win them 1-0, weren't we?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we should start looking towards that now.
Well, we can look at a home banker for City. Arsenal, a little bit more difficult, but you'd expect them to win at home. So Liverpool will go into Sunday, you'd imagine, third.
It's interesting.
I guess pressure.
A lot of the fixtures have worked out because I look. Liverpool go last nearly all of the time.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And I do think that, again,
it brings added pressure, doesn't it?
It brings added
pressure.
You know
what you've got to do, yeah. But yeah.
It brings added pressure. And also, it is a little bit typical. You know, some would say Liverpool have had the rough end of the stick when it comes to the scheduling of fixtures. And I think, again, I don't think, you know, this is me pointing out facts, not moaning, but just pointing out compared to the other main contenders for the Premier League title, they are the ones who've perhaps not been given the first crack of the whip by the schedulers.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool have had every 12-30 going, haven't they? But I guess that's another byproduct of or a benefit of Champions League football. You play on a Tuesday some weeks.
I think it wouldn't have made any difference, let's be honest. When Liverpool have been in the Champions League, it's been more or less the same.
Yeah, but Klopp always makes the point that Wednesday to Saturday is a lot different to Thursday to Sunday. I don't know why, but obviously preparation times and whatever else.
There's a press conference. That's
yeah, different. Yeah. I mean, that is a tweak, isn't it? You know, we're kind of pulling the curtain back. Klopp's already done his press conference for Sunday's game, did it last night, and the week before did it on Wednesday. So I suppose that is a material, tangible difference. But, yeah, I mean, at least playing Sunday most weeks, well, theoretically should make you exempt from the Saturday 12:30, but Liverpool still seem to have played about five of them this season, so maybe that backs up your point.
And, of course, now it looks almost certain there's only three home games for your club to be in charge, and this is the first of those three. It's Crystal Palace, so let's hope that the fans right behind the team and, you know, enjoy the moment, because in a couple of weeks there won't be any more Jurgen Klopp moments and it'll be Sam Allardyce.
do you think then that there might be a what's the phrase, overcompensation on Sunday for the lack of flags on
I don't think the people who brought the flags are responsible for a lack of atmosphere. It go back to Thursday again, but I think they'll be wanted to make up for lost time in terms of waving them about and making sure that they're all there.
Well, yes, I agree with you there.
I thought you disagreed with everything that I said.
Not everything, just me.
I'm getting everybody on board the positivity train.
Famously conducted by me. Come after on the tracks.
We've spoken a lot.
Beth, if you go with your mum this weekend, make sure she's singing Fields of Anfield Road.
Yeah, my mum isn't. Just to let everyone in on a little anecdote. So my mum came to the game last night. She doesn't come to the match often, and we said, you know, probably a good game for you to come. It shouldn't be too stressful.
So it's her fault, basically.
So sorry, mum. Sorry for exposing you on the podcast as well, if you are listening to this. If anyone is concerned, my mum isn't going on Sunday, so hopefully Liverpool should win.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
We've spoken a lot this season, Gorsty, about Liverpool's resilience and the tenacity and their ability to come from behind. No one's done it more in the Premier League. But there is only so long that you can do that. And, you know, you can't keep relying on coming from behind. And just sort of looking at Liverpool's form over the last couple of months, it does sort of feel like maybe a result like this has been coming. I think the last truly sort of excellent performance.
I thought we weren't talking about Atlanta anymore.
More general Premier League point. Form point.
The last sort of truly excellent performance, I think, was that 4-1 against Chelsea at home. And I think since then, almost every game, there's been some element of jeopardy in it, whether it's been going behind, whether it's been, you know, needing a late goal like against Forest, even against Sheffield United, a game that I think a lot of people thought, oh, you know, how many are Liverpool going to win by? It ended up being more difficult than it needed to be. And then there's the two games at United. Do you feel like it has maybe been something that has been in the works for some time, a result like this?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Captain Hindsight, doesn't it, saying it? But I think we made the point a couple of weeks back that there's just been too much emotion behind things. And the Sheffield United game is a perfect example of, you're talking about a little bit of a breather against the bottom of the league side. They're clearly going to be relegated and might be straightforward and Liverpool concede first and having to turn it on in the second half to eventually get over the line. And it was something, I think I also mentioned this on a pod a couple of weeks back, that it was something I put to Van Dijk and Klopp that week, that is it possible to sustain this when everything seems to be all full pelt, you know, pedal to the metal and emotional and there's no real control over things and it all gets a bit chaotic. And Liverpool thrive in those conditions at times, but you can't do it for so long. I think Liverpool were doing it too early. I think maybe next couple of games is when you really want to be tapping into that, and that can have a huge impact in the kind of last sort of five or six games. But Liverpool have been doing it now for weeks, haven't they? And maybe they're just the run on fumes at the moment. And that's why the returns of the likes of Jota and Alexander-Arnold and Jones and even Bešetić, maybe to an extent, can help ease that. But at the moment, it just looks like there's a team who are out on the feet and they need an injection of calm, really, and a good, you know, routine, run-of-the-mill home victory. And maybe Sunday is the ideal time for that.
Yeah, let's talk about some individuals then. I think a common theme for Liverpool over the last few weeks has been not taking the chances. Darwin Núñez, I mean, we've spoken about him a lot this season. A lot of what we've said has been positive. I think the general consensus is that Liverpool play better when he is in the team. I don't think that changes based on a couple of poor performances, but it's hard to hide from the fact that, you know, he cost a lot of money. And in the last two games, when Liverpool have been a goal down, he's been taken off the pitch, which isn't necessarily what you want from your sort of big money striker. Only once this season has he scored in consecutive games in the Premier League. He had that run where he scored against Burnley, Brentford and Forest, which again, for a striker who comes in and costs a lot of money, you know, you want them to be going on a run where they're scoring four, five, six games in a row. What do Liverpool do this summer, Doyle, with Nunes? Do they think cash in on him? Do they think he becomes more of a squad player? Or do you think you stick with him and he's still going to come good for Liverpool?
Well, after the United game, if you actually read everything that you believe in the internet, which my dad seems to do because he's the one who tells me about this, saying, have you seen this? It's like, yeah, it's not true. It's on the internet, so it's clearly not true.
Especially if even Ian Doyle wrote it.
Exactly. No, we have to put it into print. You know, it's permanent then. That Nunes is getting sold, Diaz is getting sold, Salah's getting sold, and Gakpo's getting sold. So
big rebuilding job.
Exactly. It's a massive rebuilding job for whoever comes in, Sam Allardyce. The point being is that people just overreact. And I know that we obviously get paid to react, but I'd like to think that we don't overreact to certain things. And Liverpool, that was only the second game this season that Liverpool haven't scored.
Mm.
And they still had. Nunes himself had two really good chances. One very good chance. And of course, if he puts that in, game's completely different. And I know you'll say, well, he didn't put it in. And there's been loads of games where he hasn't put it in. So sell him is what you're basically saying.
No, I'm not saying I would sell him, but I'm saying...
There are people who are saying that.
Yeah, there are people who are saying that. And
Which is just a bit stupid, let's be honest.
I think the thing with Nunes is we've sort of been waiting for a time where he really sort of comes good, I guess, and has this consistent run. And I think maybe it's a point now where we have to accept that that might not ever come.
Don't forget, he's a, well, no. I don't know if
he's scored 18 goals this season.
He's had loads of assists.
And get to 20.
And he's been struggling, certainly the last month, with an injury. Mm. Not the only one. See, most of the players will be having, you know, various ailments, part of the ones who are coming back, and then they're not fully fit. So it's not very well having these players.
I'm a big fan of Nunes, and I, you know, I certainly wouldn't sell him. I think he's, you know, I think he brings so much to this team.
Would you sell Diaz? Gakpo? Salah?
I'd keep them all, to be honest. I think one of them will probably go. I think it's looking likely to be Diaz at the moment, isn't it?
Loads of speculation, isn't there, with Diaz? I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be against selling Diaz if you told me that you're going to get
Mbappe
67 million for him. No, but my issue with Liverpool selling these like big players is always I'm not convinced that they go and replace them directly.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon it's certainly within the owner's makeup to sell Luis Diaz for 70 million, say, to PSG this summer, and the replacement be half that in terms of cost.
If you're Diaz, why would you go to PSG, though? No, but I watched them the other night. They're not very good, are they? You'd make them better. But then, separate from the Premier League is difficult. Although he obviously wants to go and play in Spain, but Real Madrid aren't going to sign him, and I don't think Barcelona have got the money.
I suppose it's all academic at the minute, isn't it? We don't know anything.
Is that,
for,
by the way,
definite.
Is that, can't wait to talk.
Can't wait to give it. Yeah.
Can I just interrupt? But I've just spotted something on the internet, so therefore it's not true. And it's one of the fan accounts who said, debate, do you think it's the right time for Jurgen Klopp to leave Liverpool and for the club to have a fresh start next season? And it's like, he literally is leaving, so
it's not any late. It's like, he should be sacked.
It's like, yeah, he's like, what they're saying, yeah. It's like,
you manage a bounce for the end of the season. It's like title running.
Honestly, it's like they've lost one game. They are still top of the Premier League. Yes, joint top of the Premier League on goal difference.
As Doyle's being far too positive, Gorsty, let's touch on Dominic Szoboszlai, who I feel a bit sorry for because I think he almost made it a bit of a rod for his own back. He came in and he was so good. He was getting talked up as being the next Steven Gerrard. And I still think he's going to be a brilliant player for Liverpool in the long term. But I think since the turn of the year, he's not been quite as effective as he was when he came in.
Yeah.
There's caveats. He's had a couple of injury setbacks as well. But he was poor when he came on last night. I thought actually when he first came on, he injected a real bit of energy.
About 5 minutes. Yeah.
And then, you know, he obviously gives the ball away for what could prove to be, what probably will prove to be a fatal third goal for Atalanta. Is it something that you just sort of have to take on the chin at the moment and say, you know, maybe once he's back to full fitness and he'll get back to his best, or is it a bit more concerning?
No, I think it's... I don't think he's any different to what most players are in that when they get a bit of rhythm and momentum and they're at 100%, when they play for Liverpool, you start to see why they play for Liverpool. We've seen that with certainly with the likes of Joe Gomez this season, you know, once they get a run, they start to show form. And I think he's been a little bit unlucky with the injury that he had. It certainly seemed to be a persistent one. He was playing with it and then was out of the team with it and then come back and then kind of aggravated it again. And it's difficult to keep up with these injuries off the top of my head because there have been that many to track in the last few months. But he was certainly one of them. Trent in a similar boat, really, just haven't been able to shake it off. Was it Newcastle? Was it Boszlai went off on New Year's Day?
And yes.
There was one game, wasn't there, where Klopp got asked before about the luxury of having his whole squad available, and it was literally for that one game, and then everything went
wrong. I think it was Arsenal, away in the league. And then Thiago famously played his 6 minutes and got injured. Yeah, I don't think it's a huge long-term worry. I just think he's played a lot of minutes. You know, I'd be interested to look into this, but it might even be his most minutes of his career already this season, and he's been injured for what feels like maybe 2 months or so. So, yeah, he's played a lot of minutes in a new league, a demanding team in a demanding league, and I'm not too worried long-term, but at the moment he's just a little bit out of sorts, isn't he?
He is, and it probably didn't help, doily, that Endo and McAllister had arguably the worst games in a Liverpool shirt last night.
Endo doesn't look fit, but McAllister looks tired. And then suddenly you've come down to they were always going to get caught out on this defensive midfield thing in the end, and it's come in middle of April. So they've done, as I said before, they've done really well to last this long, and it's not... It's terminal for the Europa League, but it's certainly not terminal for the Premier League. So you just have to wait and see what happens. But Bacetic is interesting because now he's back. I do wonder whether he might end up playing for a little bit if it's possibly playing the second leg in Atalanta. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, where do you find the space for the game to not be as meaningful? Because he hasn't played for 13 months, has he, really? So difficult one for him.
I can't see him playing much between now. Unless Liverpool completely go off the boil in the league in the last few games.
My point being is that he might have to play if Endo has got a problem and McAllister is tired. But at least he's there as an option.
I think for him, Bacetic now is just thinking ahead to a big summer and trying to catch the new manager's eye.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Let's talk about something that I've dubbed the Harvey Elliott conundrum. Unfair to pin the blame on him last night because he was probably, as you said in your player ratings, doily, one of the brightest spots for Liverpool in the first half. Obviously has that shot that hits the crossbar.
And the post.
And has been excellent this season. But I think a common theme with Harvey Elliott seems to be he has a couple of really brilliant cameos from the bench. He's offered a start, doesn't quite deliver in the same way that he does when he comes off the bench. So therefore, is he at this moment in time a better sub for Liverpool than he is a starter?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you look at his best performances this season. Played really well against West Ham when he started there on the right of the front three, but his biggest impacts tend to come as a right-sided centre midfielder in a cameo. Protects it really well, looks after it well, doesn't he? Really gives it away. Really neat and tidy. And has started to... You can see the improvements he's making in his shooting. He was really unlucky last night with that curled one, wasn't he? And I think he scored a few this season. Absolutely flying with the England under-21s. Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting for him just kind of looking ahead to where the new manager sees him. You know, Liverpool, you know, famously don't play with a number 10. But I think his qualities are best suited to that role. You know, his touch and his technique and his vision. So that could be something for him further down the line if they play a manager who likes that role. But, I do think at the moment his role is as an impact sub, and there's no real shame in that. He's only just turned 21 and he's been around the first team for a long time, but still got years of development and improvements to make.
I thought he should have played at right mid. I don't think he should.
I thought he could have said right back there.
No, well, he could have done, couldn't he? He should have played at right mid. I think for most of the first half, he tried to play there himself anyway. Mm. And that's the play yours.
It's yours,
it's
I think.
Loud. And I think for most of the first half, he tried to do that. And I think that's kind of... Klopp made mention of it, didn't he? He said the left winger and the right winger, he sometimes just look like, where are they in the first half? Which is probably why he got brought off. But I don't think they were expecting Szoboszlai and Salah and the rest of them to just be quite as bad as they were in the second half. So I think he probably, in retrospect, he might have wanted to keep him on. Mm-hmm. Just moved him to right midfield. Mm-hmm. So if he's going to start, I think he has to start there. If he's going to play on the right wing, it has to be with almost full through his team. And even then, when Salah was missed, it wasn't his best performances, because I do think that he is better served as a right midfielder.
He's sort of played there now, hasn't he, for 2 or 3 years as a midfielder. That sort of right wing position was when he was a young player in the academy, the occasional Carabao Cup run out. For the majority of his senior career, he's been a central midfielder, hasn't he?
I think in the old days, if you played 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1 or even 4-2-3-1, and if you got a left winger who's a winger, he could play the right side easily. He could play that kind of withdrawn right midfielder, and then you could allow whoever the right back is to start running down the line, which could be Conor Bradley, and you've got Alexander-Arnold in midfield. So I'm just picking a new team for the new manager.
Look at you, Tactico. About XG next.
Former G.
A rare bright spot last night, apart from the referee taking pity on the crowd and only awarding 3 minutes of added time at the end, was Cody Gakpo's performance, yeah. I thought. He's had a lot of criticism this season. A lot of it, I think, unwarranted, because he's almost had to be quite selfless, in the sense he's come into the team when there's been injuries. He's not always played in his preferred position, which he would probably say is on the left. I think that is probably his best position as well. I thought last night, I mean, he tried. I think that's probably the best you can say for any of the players. And he had a couple of nice little turns and didn't really give up, which I thought was, you know, admirable in the circumstances.
Yeah, Theo made the point in our match blog that maybe it's no surprise to see Gakpo looking so bright when he's playing in his preferred position. We know he's another one who's been maybe hampered a bit harsh, but he's had to play in a number of positions, hasn't he? Like Joe Gomez, he's played central midfield at times. I think Klopp's acknowledged that's been a mistake. They've tried to reinvent him as a number nine. But he played on the left last night and looked sharp, doesn't he? Carries it so well, very strong and powerful in his running. Looked to play in Nunes a few times and Elliott almost got him in on one or two occasions. Just looked bright. He's been good in the Europa League for Liverpool this season. But I think he sort of faded by the end when Liverpool didn't really seem to have shape. They just had loads of attacking players on the pitch and hoped that would do some sort of damage, and it didn't. But if you're clinging on to positives, he's one.
Yeah. Chances of turning it around next week, Doyley, you're saying absolutely no way.
There's absolutely no way. Absolutely no way. As far, or not because they can't score four goals, but you reckon they can score four or three and then they're not going to score one? Don't think so.
Go see any chance? Sorry.
I mean, we know Liverpool are good at flicking a switch and getting a couple of quick fire goals, and they do have that ability in them. But you're just looking at another, you know, it wouldn't rank anywhere near the kind of Barcelona types of territory, but it's along those lines, isn't it? You know, a huge European comeback, and it's away from home, and I'm not sure what the allocation is for the away fans and all that stuff. So it's going to be difficult. But like Klopp said to the team allegedly all those years ago, you know, because it's huge, you've got a chance. And I suppose with the firepower that Liverpool will have, you know, they'll have all five fit and ready to go, won't they? So,
touch wood.
Well, I wouldn't totally rule it out, but it's obviously going to be difficult.
You forgot to mention Jota. Jota being back.
Is it another positive, isn't it? And you think, had he been a little bit sharper and had a bit more match fitness, he maybe would have took one of those chances here.
This is the byproduct, isn't it, of players being injured. Once they come back into the team, they're not at the level that they were at straight away. So the injury is still ongoing, as it were. And had he been fresh, he might have scored twice last night. And I'm not blaming him at all, because he's been a great player this season when he's been fit. And Liverpool have certainly cursed his absence at times, but that header at the end, you know, if he was 100%, he probably sticks that away, and Liverpool have got something to cling to. But I guess it's just about getting momentum and rhythm for him now, and hopefully it's not too late in the day for him to have another impact.
Before we have a quick look ahead to Palace then, let's talk about our Nord Person of the Week, a new initiative that's been brought into the podcasts.
Difficult one, isn't it?
It is a difficult one. It doesn't have to be a player, Gorsi. It can be anyone. Any suggestions?
Ian Doyle for his rare positive right back.
I'm going to nominate myself as well.
I'm going to nominate my mum, because, God love her, She went to that game with hope in her heart. And she's a bit shell-shocked this morning, and she feels like it is her fault, which...
Well, to be fair, it is.
It isn't, Mum, if you're listening. It really isn't. So I'm going to...
Why didn't she get off the bench?
I'm going to overrule everyone and give it to my mum.
How does that work? It's two to one.
I'm the host, so I get the final say.
I like that. Okay.
Yeah. Special mention as well for anyone who didn't shout shoot at Joe Gomez at any point.
That was just like when he did then have a shot and it went about 15 miles over, you know, the crowd were like up moaning. It's like, well, you've been telling him to shoot all season, so he's had a shot, stop moaning.
But then I do think on a serious point, we do this, you know, person of the week thing now, and the fact that we haven't come up with anything probably tells you just how difficult a few days it's been.
We did. We came up with me.
Well, when you're winning, that speaks volumes, I guess.
Positivity. I'm being rewarded for my positivity, and therefore...
See what happens when you're positive?
Yeah, exactly.
So why are you positive?
I thought Roy's taking on me my own mum.
Let's move on then to the weekend. Obviously, a huge game takes on probably added significance now with the Europa League dream. Hanging in the balance. That's a nice way to say it. Very precariously. On the edge of a cliff.
On the precipice.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
If you're Crystal Palace and you're watching that game last night, and maybe even watching, you know, Liverpool in the second half at Old Trafford, are you licking your lips coming to Anfield on Sunday?
No, or are you fearing the worst? Not particularly. I'd look at that if I was Oliver Glasner and think, well, he's made six changes, so, you know, he's going to throw in Mo Salah against us, he's going to throw in Andy Robertson, you know, whoever else. So not necessarily, and I'd almost be fearing a bit of a backlash if I'm Crystal Palace. But in terms of teams coming to Anfield, Palace, for me, always seem like they're a little bit of a bit unorthodox and a bit awkward to navigate. You know, they played, obviously, last season was right at the beginning of the season, wasn't it? So it's about 18 months since that game now, at least, maybe even more. But they got a 1-1 draw that day. I don't know why I seem to have it in my head that they always seem to give Liverpool a right go. Certainly at Anfield, at Selhurst Park, I think that 3-3 draw of a decade ago was still somehow held up as banana skin territory for Liverpool, even though they tend to win every other time that they've been. But certainly at Anfield, it does seem as though they have a way of playing about them. You know, I think Eze's a fabulous player, really. I don't think he will be there for too much longer, potentially. But if we put aside Thursday night, I think Klopp will make significant changes again. I think we'll see a better atmosphere, and if Liverpool are serious about winning the league, it's one that they have to go and win.
I've just seen the fixtures, and Arsenal go second on Sunday. So everything that we said about Liverpool's lack of vantage, just scratch that from the records.
Oh, so therefore...
Do they play at half four?
Well, that's something for Liverpool to maybe put a bit of pressure back on them.
Also, Crystal Palace, the only two teams they've beaten in the Premier League this calendar year are Burnley and Sheffield United at home. So that perhaps tells you...
Say that one again, sorry.
The only two teams that Crystal Palace have beaten in the Premier League this calendar year, so since New Year's Day, they beat Burnley 3-0 at home when Burnley had a player sent off, and they beat Sheffield United 3-2.
So they're going to win on Sunday.
It suggests to me that Crystal Palace perhaps aren't particularly good.
But also as well, Liverpool will have played twice before Arsenal have played, in terms of they played Tuesday night and Sunday afternoon, which is a... You know, in these kind of fine margin areas, that's a massive...
Point, actually, yes. So I strike my previously unstruck...
Unstruck.
Let's have your teams then, Doyley. Who's in goal? Is Alisson?
He's not fit yet, is he? I mean, Kelleher obviously made a bit of a mistake for the first goal. I know you were trying to blame him for the third one, but I don't think that's true.
I don't think blame him, but I think...
You said he was...
He parried it straight into the other guys.
So where were the other defenders?
Yeah, true.
Right, so Kelleher's in goal.
And the rest of your back line?
Bradley comes back. I'm putting Quanta back in. Van Dijk stays Robertson's left back.
Yeah, it's difficult to argue, really. I mean, Klopp got asked about Trent last night. which I can't reveal because it's not before 1 p.m. Bradley.
You're asking the question then?
I'm not sure. I wasn't there.
It was
Dean Ashton of TalkSport.
Yes.
/ former West Ham striker.
Yes.
Apparently.
So he definitely played for West Ham.
No, I know that.
He's ex-West Ham.
The fact that we're talking about,
we've
just made that point about the makeshift back line, but then we're bringing in Kwanzaa and Bradley as soon as we get an opportunity. So I suppose it shows you how well they've done. I wouldn't disagree with Doyle's pick.
Were you surprised that Bradley didn't get any action? I was surprised by that last night. Maybe he's just a bit tired or something, I don't know.
Yeah, well, he comes in on Sunday then.
Are you picking him?
I'm picking him, yeah. I'm going to have a little word with Jürgen.
So what's your team there, your defence?
Would be exactly the same, yeah.
Okay. What's your midfield?
I think Endo needs a rest, or do you think he needs minutes? I don't know.
Asking you,
I think that unspecified knock that he got. I agree with you. I don't think he's 100%.
Let's give him a rest then. Let's put McAllister in.
Well, doesn't McAllister need a rest?
He does, but maybe you give them 45 each because Liverpool will win 5-0 in the first half, and then you can change things. I don't know, McAllister. I mean, it's hard because I don't think any of
long six conundrum that Liverpool have had.
Yeah, and Curtis Jones, I don't think looked fit necessarily.
Again, that's what happens. Players are injured; they're not back straight away, are they?
You can't have dead air on podcasts. So come on, just fill it with noise or something. Just go.
Let's go. So Szoboszlai, give him a chance to redeem himself. McAllister. Endo, let's give it a whirl because I don't think there's many better options.
Yeah, there's not too many candidates for the number six role, is there? Even if we're thinking that Endo is not 100%, maybe he might not be too overexerted. Palace will look to counter, you'd imagine, with the pace they've got. I can't make too many arguments for anyone else really, other than Endo. McAllister has been informed, apart from last night. There is a case to be made that he could do the rest, but I'm powering through and. Yeah, it's a Szoboszlai chance to play yourself into some form.
Are you, is Szoboszlai scarf surviving?
It is surviving, yeah.
Good. I'd probably, Endo, I agree, I don't think Endo's fit, and I don't think he'll play.
But then who's fit
then I'm instead. Worried about, you know, McAllister's number six, it's hard, it was hard enough when he was stuck there, now he's swapping over, it's become a, you know. What was that game? Recently, it was at Sheffield United where he played, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah. And I'm not saying Sheffield United just didn't do anything, did they, to be honest? So it wasn't really that much of an issue. I do think perhaps Szoboszlai has to play and McAllister has to play, and then it's that third one.
Elliot?
Well, the thing is, Elliot.
But then where does it...
Elliot has played on the left of that midfield. You'd have to play Szoboszlai on the left of the midfield three.
And put Harvey on the right.
On the right. It's the only way that would work. In fact, I'm going to go with that.
Okie doke. Forward line.
Yeah, I will go.
Jota. Sorry, case for Jota.
A bit early for him.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of something to freshen it up, really, because, I mean, Gakpo maybe has done enough to want him to start, but I think Diaz has generally been okay lately. He didn't really do much off the bench last night, but, yeah, and then Nunes down the middle, Diaz and Salah.
I'm going to say Gakpo down the middle and Diaz on the left and... Adrian on the right and Salah on the right, obviously.
Yeah, I quite like that. And then Nunes fuming on the bench, comes on and scores a hat-trick.
Oh, we haven't mentioned Trent, have we? Because he was back as well on the bench. So you look at the players on the bees up on the bench, they'd have Jota be ready to come on. Jones, you'd think, would be able to make a bit of an impact. Nunes, if this is the team, Nunes there. You'd have Endo on the bench in case things go slightly wrong. So the options are there, but it's now a case of just, you know, because, okay, we'll get on to the Atlanta game next week, the second leg, what he does there, because it'll be interesting to see what he does. But they've got another midweek game following week, haven't they? Where it's been now that they've arranged the game, the Everton game. Everton. It's like they could have moved it to another week now.
At least he's not got to travel anyway.
Yeah, there is that. The show play of the week.
Well, the Villa game's been moved to Monday night as well.
Has it?
Yeah. Oh, I was not happy with that. Again.
Well, it's been cathartic. It's been like a bit of a therapy session today, I think. Oh, score predictions as well.
The score predictions, yeah. See, Palace taking an early lead, Liverpool to be poor in the first half and then win 3-1.
Liverpool will win 5-4.
Is that your serious prediction?
No, 5-3.
5-3.
I'm going with 5-3. Genuinely going with
5-3. I'm going to go 4-0. I'm going to say Liverpool.
4-0.
Yeah. They've got to start getting clean sheets at some point, and Sunday is going to be the day that they do it. Let's hope so anyway. Thank you both for joining us and engaging in this therapeutic...
I like this newfound Mr. Positive.
It's therapeutic for you because you've fed off the positive vibes. You've just said that Liverpool are going to win comfortably.
Or maybe you're just at an even keel and me and Beth are a bit...
That is actually it. Mr. No Emotion.
Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed, and we'll be back.
Mr. X Emotion.
We'll be back next week. Ian Doyle will be super positive for another episode of the Blood Red Podcast.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.